This is Jail the Oppressor, Free the Oppressed. And now I'd like to introduce our two guests. We have Sue Reardon, who is the mother of Eric Kleemeyer, and Katrina Lalowski, who is the cousin of Eric. And they both came all the way from Santa Clara today to come in and speak about Eric here on the radio. So, Sue, would you be willing to, you know, explain to people about who Eric was and what happened on January 4th, 2005?
Okay, Eric had just turned 22 on December 15th. He was a very fun-loving, happy-go-lucky person who would do anything for you, and he played Little League. He loved all water sports. He just liked to get out and do as much as he could in life and help anybody that he could at work. He was a supervisor at Costco and really enjoyed his job there. And he had called me over New Year's Eve, and I was out of town, so I didn't talk with him until I returned. And on Sunday, when I came back into town, he had called to see if I could do his laundry for him, like I always would do. And I said, you know, I was doing mine, so I asked him when he had his day off again, and he said it would be on Tuesday. And I said, well, I'll come pick it up on Tuesday and do that. So I hadn't talked to Eric or seen him previous to that, except for December 24th, Christmas Eve. That was the last time I seen him alive. And we had a really nice holiday that day and evening. And I had just had a roommate move in with me on January 4th. And it was his first night at my home also. And, you know, I'd gone to bed early because I finally felt comfortable having someone in the house with me again after my twins had moved out also. One's in the Navy and one's in the Marines. And we heard sirens and we both woke up at the same time that night on January 4th. It was about 12:20 early in the morning. And we went running outside and I seen a ton of cop cars everywhere. And a car stopped and a person laying in the street. And I wear corrective lenses and I didn't have my glasses on, so I ran back in the house and put my glasses on and my robe, and I went back outside and I went running over to the corner, which was about 20 feet from my home, and I seen my son laying in the street with his face covered in blood, and I wanted to get over to him in the corner, and they had started putting up the caution tape. And a big, real tall, heavy police officer pushed me back and said that I couldn't go across the lines, that they would arrest me. So I went running back in the house and just dropped on the floor and called my boyfriend to come over. I was screaming on the phone that they killed Eric, they killed Eric. And at that time, I didn't even know if he was really dead or alive. And then I went running over to my neighbor who I've grown up with. And he was holding on to me, and I was crying really hard, and I told him that they needed to call my sister. So we called my sister and my nieces. I called my sister, and she was asleep, so I was screaming at my niece to wake her up. And then they came over, and they wouldn't, at that time they had cautioned off the whole street area and wouldn't let anybody across any of the lines. And Eric was just laying there in the street. Nobody was even doing anything to try to help him. And that really concerned me. So I finally had waited a few minutes and turned back around, and I seen somebody overworking on him. And I seen an ambulance there, but he never got in the ambulance. They never picked him up and put him in the ambulance. And then my boyfriend had arrived. And I was just screaming at him, why aren't they doing anything for Eric? And he didn't really say too much to me. And then they wanted to take me downtown to question me. And I told him basically where they could go to, because I wasn't going anywhere with my son laying there. And I wanted to know about my son.
Why did they want to question you?
I have no idea. And finally a detective had came up to me that I had previously dealt with when Eric's friend Little Joe was killed in Santa Clara a couple years prior to that from a gang-related incident, and Eric was with him. And I said, I know him, I'll talk to him. So I let him come into my house, and he just started asking me questions about Eric, about what type of person he was, if he drank a lot, if he was, you know, partied a lot. And I said, you know, Eric hasn't lived in my home for a year. I don't know what Eric does on his own time. Eric works a lot of hours, and on his free time, you know, I don't know what he did. And I hadn't really, you know, seen a lot of that. In the past, he had had a few issues with alcohol, but not, you know, currently. So when he kept being persistent about that, I told him I had nothing else to say to him and he needed to leave my home. In the meantime, a lot more undercover cops or detectives. What were they? Detectives?
I guess.
Doing the crime scene. They all showed up over there and they were taking pictures. They were moving stuff around. And I just kept looking out the window because they just left Eric laying in the same spot. They never did anything with him. And I had asked that detective to let me know, you know, what if I could go over to see him, and they would not let me get near him. I just wanted to lay next to him. And then I tried to get back in my house, and they had caution taped it all off, and I couldn't even get in my house. We had to climb the fence to get over into my house because I was shaking so hard. I had to lay down. And then, you know, Katrina and Laura, they came in the room with me too, and my boyfriend was with me the whole time also. And then I called their dad up, who lives up in Washington, to tell him. And then, you know, all the phone calls had started because my sister had finally told me, you know, that Eric was dead. And
so it was your sister who told you?
Yeah.
And how did she find out? Who told her?
I don't remember.
So here again, how many hours had passed since you first heard the gunshots by this time?
I never heard any gunshots.
I just heard sirens.
And that was after he was already
shot
to death and dead.
So, but when you heard the sirens, he had already been shot.
Yes.
Shot to death.
Yes.
And how many hours did it take for you to find out that he was dead?
I would say when my sister told me it was probably an hour and a half after, but she told me, not any of the detectives or officers. None of them ever came up and said anything to me. None of them said they were sorry for what had happened. You know, when I read the, I started going through the police report after I finally got it 5 months later. And I was just had read a portion of it because I just start crying all the time. And one of the officers says that they seen the mother over on the corner hysterical. It's like, well, what the hell do you think? You know, cool. Just the whole process of everything that they did that night. You know, you're just standing there in a haze and you really can't believe that it really happened.
And they pretty much were treating you as if you had committed a crime.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Not giving you any information, but wanting to interrogate you, keeping you out of your house.
That's what they did. And a family friend knew a attorney, so they contacted him and he was over in the morning. And as soon as he showed up, the detective that was going to come back in and tell me a little about what had happened said, oh, you have an attorney now. I can't talk to you. And didn't really say too much beyond that. And I said, well, how am I going to know what's happened here? And they said, well, we'll let you know. And they never let me know. And then after the family members started arriving, we called to get a police report. And they wouldn't issue us a police report. And, you know, that night when they had shot Eric, they left him in the street for 8.5 hours before they the coroner came and took him away. And that really bothered me, looking out my window and him just laying there.
8.5 hours. And because they had to investigate as to what happened?
I have no idea. It was like, it was like he didn't matter to them. It didn't matter what had happened. Like, they could care less that they just killed somebody.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know the effect that it has on people's lives when they do something like that.
As if Eric wasn't a human being, and yeah, you're not a human being, and Katrina, you're not a human being. Or even the family, Eric's close friends in the neighborhood who knew him, and his other close friends, if nobody is a human being.
They treated him basically like he was just a trophy for them.
So did they again try to interrogate you, bring you into the police station to interrogate you?
No, I told them I wouldn't go anywhere.
Did they try to interrogate anybody else in the family?
They asked everybody about Eric that was there, and Eric's roommate had came over, and he was really, really drunk. And then they used him for a witness for that night, when he can't even hardly walk or remember anything. That's who they call in during the grand jury. And, you know, it's like everybody that's known Eric his whole life, they didn't even call in to ask questions. They just had that set up to make Eric look like he deserved that, and nobody, no matter what they do, deserves to be shot to death like Eric was.
Could, I might ask Katrina to go into the details of that. So maybe I'll do that for Katrina, to go into the details of actually the whole thing of being pursued by the cops and being so viciously and brutally shot to death. And then I'd like to come back to you and ask you to talk about the whole thing, what the whole thing of how transpired the closed grand jury, because the DA really did you a bad deed when that happened too.
Yes.
So, Katrina, could you speak a little bit closer to the microphone and, you know, tell us a little bit about the events that transpired, and, you know, for...
Well, I remember I was just watching TV and the phone rang. It was really late, so I thought it was something bad right away. And my mom was asleep. My sister was going hysterical pretty much because my aunt was just screaming, like, they shot Eric, they shot Eric. And we ran and were banging on my mom's bedroom door for her to open it. It seemed like hours, but it was probably just a minute or two. And we were racing over there, running red lights, stop signs, whatever, just to get there. And as soon as I turned the corner, I saw all the caution tape, all the police cars with the lights, and just him laying in the street with the yellow blanket over him. My mom knew right away that he was dead, but I was kind of just in shock, so I didn't really think about that right away. And immediately, my mom tried running over to him, but she had crossed the police tape, so one of the cops tried to restrain her, and another one grabbed her arm and, like, put it behind her back, pretty much almost, like, it really hurt her or something. And, they said if we cross the police line again that they'll arrest us. And we just basically had to stand there and look at what they had done to him, just lying there on the pavement. And we tried to get into Sue's house, but they wouldn't let us in because it was crossing the tape. So we went into the neighbor's yard and hopped the fence and got in that way. So we were in the house trying to comfort her, and when we were in the house, we were looking at it from a different view, and we could see more of it, pretty much. But then they were trying to get their cop cars to cover it up so that we couldn't see it from our angle. And I recall one cop almost tripping over him. Another cop was fiddling with his flashlight and dropped it. And most of them were just standing around, not even doing anything. One of them questioned me, because I had talked to Eric a couple hours prior to this, and he asked me what he had said. I just said he was drinking a beer, watching TV, and that was about it. And I never heard anything from them ever since that. But the police has still been following us and harassing us.
Could you, I know that on the website it goes into pretty good detail about the whole thing of Eric being chased by the cops, mm-hmm. and then what the cops did to block him in until, and then when they shot him. So would you be willing to talk about that, you know, to explain about that?
Basically, they all had him pinned in the driveway.
But why did they even chase after him in the beginning?
Well, they said it was because he was doing donuts or something in a parking lot over by some other crime scene that had happened that night. And they were chasing him, and, they finally got him pinned in the driveway and just opened fire. Didn't even say who they were, no come out with your hands up, nothing. They just shot him right there.
29 times. He had 18 entry and exit wounds.
And he had no weapon on him whatsoever?
No weapon.
From what I remember in the papers, they're claiming, or actually I saw it on the television, the cops claimed that they were feared for their lives because they claimed he had tried to hit them, but it's very clear from the website that that's not what happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
That they basically boxed him in, he hit a neighbor's car, and that car is what hit the cop car. So the cops had nothing to fear, whatever, because they were chasing Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the family has been very strong through this whole horrible murder of a precious human being, and you pretty quickly tried to demand for the DA to do an open grand jury. Could you explain, like, you did start doing protests, you had a number of protests in Santa Clara, and I think at least one in San Jose. Could you explain this whole thing, what transpired with the Santa Clara County DA's office?
We met with Karen Sununu for about 15 minutes one afternoon. The attorney, myself, my sister, and another attorney for the DA, Peter Wade, and they said that it was going to go to a grand jury, and we asked that it be open so that we could attend and hear what they had to say. You know, I wanted to know what's going on regarding my son, and they said, well, we normally don't do that, but it could happen. And so we were trying to find out how you can go about changing that to make it happen. And the only way that it's happened in the past is if people protest for it. So they decided to wait like 2 or 3 days before the open grand jury to tell us that it was actually going to happen when it happened. And we didn't have a lot of time. So we did go ahead and go down and protest. We had people calling, and they were very rude over the phone, telling people to not call them. And after that, we did that on a Friday, I think it was. And then Saturday, we went down and stood on the corner across from the police department in Santa Clara, and we're protesting there also. And, you know, we were saying that officers Middlecoff, Vaden, and Marinas, you know, killed my son on January 4th, and they need to be indicted for murder because that's what they did. They flat out murdered him, and because they're a cop, they can get away with doing anything they want, and it's just not right. If I was to kill somebody, I'd be locked up behind bars, and it's just plain...
You can say that over the
line. It's just plain bullshit that they get away with this stuff all the time and think that they're above the law and can do whatever they want. And, you know, they're not judge and jury, and they take that into their own hands and when they kill somebody.
Executioner.
Yes. And it's, you know, I could see if my son had a gun and was pointing it at them, then yes, that would happen and that would be the end of it. But he didn't. And to just be sitting in your car petrified...
Which he was,
you know, trying to get home to me because he'd gotten in trouble a couple times previously and he always came home. That was what he would do, is he would get scared and come home to me. And that's the part that bothers me now, is because I couldn't protect him.
Nobody could have protected him in that when the cops chase after somebody.
That's true, but, you know, I've lived my life. I would have rather been shot than him because he still had a whole life to live. You know, and he was doing so good. And he just was a good person. And, you know, he wasn't a criminal. He didn't beat people up. He wasn't mean, vindictive, or anything. You know, he was always there to help people. And for them to do that, it's just not right.
It's not.
And that's what I've said from the very beginning, that it's not right. And they shouldn't get away with this. And I really hope now that it's gone to the the FBI became involved with it and they sent all their reports to Washington.
Well, I'd like to take a tiny step back because you had started talking about the open grand jury and you had talked with Karen Sununu. But then, if I remember correctly, the open grand jury was supposed to be a month ahead of time. Well, not a month ahead of time. It was supposed to be at a certain point in time. And then all of a sudden, they said, no, it's going to be a closed grand jury. And they moved it up so quick that there was nothing that could be done. So could you tell about what happened with that?
That's correct. It was supposed to be Peter Wade that we had met with that was supposed to be the attorney during the grand jury. And I don't know who made the decision. I think it was Karen. I'm not positive. I'm pretty sure that it was her since she's the boss. And they decided to put Dan Nishigawa on there, who is basically a rookie and doesn't know hardly anything. And, you know, it's like, what do they actually question? You know, they're basically in there trying to make it look like the cops didn't do anything wrong, and that's all they ever do, because Eric's dead. What difference does it make to them? You'd be taking their career and their livelihood away from them. That's what they need, though, because they shouldn't be out doing this.
But didn't they also, I thought they gave you a specific date saying that it would be a grand jury, an open grand jury, and then they changed their mind and they moved the grand jury to being a closed grand jury up a month so that there was nothing that could be done. You didn't have time to organize protests because all of a sudden it just happened.
They said that it was going to be 6 months from the date that we had met, and they had moved it up to like a month, within a month, because it was very quick from when we had met. And then Karen had said that she had met with the family at length. 15 minutes is at length, and that we would have the results. I still have not received any results from that. And what I was told was that if we want results from it, we have to go to a judge to try to get it.
So all the so-called documents that were brought forth to the grand jury for them to look at, anything that was any kind of documentation, all the testimony, the transcripts of the closed grand jury, you have not seen anything, heard anything. You have no idea what transpired in the closed grand jury, and basically that all that information is sealed from you unless you go through the expense of hiring an attorney to go through a judge to get it made available, and you still don't know how much that would cost.
That's correct. However, I am doing a federal civil lawsuit against them so that if it's done federally, they can open that up if need be. If you do it through the state, you're not able to do that. Because I want to know what was said in there. I feel it's my right. It was my son. They took my son's life. I have that right to know what the hell they said.
Yeah. And this is the reason that so many of us are so opposed to the closed grand jury. Because the majority, I don't know how it is here in Santa Cruz, but in San Jose, when it's a closed grand jury, the family has no idea what transpires in the closed grand jury hearings. We have heard that when it's a closed grand jury, often it lasts for an hour or two, whereby the open grand juries we've been to last anywhere from a week to a week and a half or 2 weeks. Now, even though of the three open grand juries that have transpired in San Jose, only one cop has been indicted. The others were not indicted, but at least the information was available to the public, and we always learn something new whenever there's an open grand jury. The law enforcement people always expose more and more of how they operate. There is a new call now that instead of even the open grand jury, that we want what's called direct filings, that the cops be treated like us civilians, that if they shoot and kill somebody, that they are indicted and brought into a trial with a prosecutor and a defense attorney just like we are, so that the public can be there. It's a regular trial with a jury, and not a DA to protect the cops. We don't want the DAs to give the green light to the cops anymore, that they can assault and murder anybody they want to.
It has to stop.
It definitely has to stop. So I don't know what other information or things that you'd like to say to the people, because we're here in Santa Cruz. It could be a lot of people here in Santa Cruz have not heard about the shooting death of Eric.
What can they do?
What you'd like for the people here to do, other things that you'd like them to know. Could you at least give the websites?
www.ericklemeyer.com, ericklemeyer.com. We'll probably continue to keep the website updated as much as we can, but probably within the next couple of weeks, it'll still be the same as it is now.
I strongly urge all of you to visit the website, because it does a very good job of telling what happened to Eric, what the whole thing of him getting chased by the cops, how the cops boxed him in, and with no prior warning, with no demands to surrender, with nothing, they just opened up seven veteran cops, not rookie cops, seven veteran cops opened fire on him.
One cop also had in the police report that he claimed he was shot. And that continued to open up fire too, and none of them were shot at all. So it's nice for them just to be able to say whatever the hell they want to have people continue shooting somebody.
Well, I just really want to thank both of you coming here today and being willing to talk about Eric and what happened. It's very, very painful to hear, and I didn't know Eric. I've never even heard of him until it happened. But I just am very grateful for your courage to come here and speak to all of us. And here's Ketza.
Thank you. Yes, compañeros. This is Ketza calling and talking to people on this program. And one thing that needs to be said is that whomever is listening to this needs to support families. This is a courageous stance that the family has taken, because time and time again we hear that police are constantly beating and harassing and killing, and many times they terrorize us so much that we don't speak out. And so there's one or two families and maybe more will be coming out that are standing up, and basically speaking on behalf of all those families that have lost, our loved ones. So it's really important for us to support them, and to encourage them and to, find justice, because this cannot continue. It just cannot go on to where they're discriminately killing people they don't even have to have a reason to kill people. So it's gotta stop. And so, we need the support of the people. Please, contact the families, get into the webs, and, contact the families, support them as much as you can. The families need the support simply because the state, which is the police, the courts, the local governments, the DAs, they all work hand in hand. They work together to be able to protect their own selves against, you know, the community. And it's interesting because we had attended an event that the Kleemeyer family had had organized. And that's a really interesting, you know, experience because it was very clear that even the media was protecting the police. So it would be good if you would explain to them just so that we can see in real life just how they all band together.
We had a Justice Fest concert for Eric and all the other families who've lost loved ones. We wanted it to be a forever in your hearts where we'll always remember our lost loved ones. And, you know, we had asked for public support and attention. And, you know, we advertised in the Santa Clara Weekly. And we wanted the Metro to become involved also. And they did not. And we had asked the Avalon on Lawrence Expressway and Homestead in Santa Clara to provide an after party for, you know, a couple of the bands that we had there, because we had the Stone City Band who came out from Buffalo, New York, and they haven't been together in 25 years, and it was actually on the year that Rick James had passed away. We did it on August 6th, and we were going to have them play there and also Moriality, and they backed out at the very last moment. And we had put up some flyers, and every time we'd put them up, the Santa Clara police would go into the businesses and tell them, there it is, and they would take them down and, you know, basically harass the owners of the businesses to not support us. And, you know, it's very disturbing that that's all the time that they have to do, you know, for their job is to go around and harass people who are trying to get justice for what they've done wrong. And when one officer does something wrong, several others have to go along with it and cover it up. And that's exactly what they're doing, all the way to the police chief and the DA. And it has to stop.
What did the Santa Clara police tell to the San Jose police?
We have to get permits in order to have an event. So you have to have a permit for the park. You have to have a police permit, a fire permit, a health environmental permit. And when they, when we went to collect the permit from the San Jose police, we were told that the Santa Clara police contacted them and asked them to not issue us a permit so we could not have the event. And the San Jose police were very understanding towards our event and us being the family. So they actually donated their time and did not ask us to pay any money for the permit to them. And they came up and they said because of the type of event that we were having there, they would just basically patrol it and gave us their cell phone number. If we had any problems, they would come back and help us out. But that was just another part of the Santa Clara police getting together and trying to do something to us again.
I don't want to give any kudos whatsoever to the San Jose Police Department because those thugs in blue have killed so many innocent human beings in San Jose. We have a family here today who's devastated over the loss of Samuel Martinez. But just that, you know, the Santa Clara Police, you know, trying to prohibit you from using a public park, which is our right as human beings to use our public parks. They were trying to even prohibit that. So I also want to, you know, also put it out there to everybody. When you read articles in the paper when somebody has been shot by the cops, you need to read it with a, you know, really a humongous grain of sand, because they lie. They lie so much, and it seems like so many of these reporters are totally lazy, and they just rely on the cop information, the thugs in blue, their information, and they don't try to get any information from the families. They demonize the person who's been killed and try to make it look like they deserved it. So when you do see in articles in the paper about when cops have shot somebody, you know, try to find other sources. Maybe instead go to Indie Media, the Indie Bay websites to find out, you know, the truth of what happened and not rely on the news articles. Katrina, did you have anything else that you'd like to tell the people?
I guess just keep checking back on the website. We'll have all the news articles up in a few weeks so people can see for themselves how much the cops are lying and all of that stuff. So.
And so do you know where, how far along the FBI investigation is, if you've been told when they'll finish their investigation? And when it does finish, what will happen then?
When we met with the FBI, they said it could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And they basically gather reports and send it back to Washington, D.C. for the Justice Department back there. And it's basically up to them to see if they're going to do anything or not. So, you know, we're really hoping that they will look into this and know that, you know, a couple of these officers have done a lot of things previously and since Eric, and take that into account, because they're the only ones that can open this up and actually file criminal charges against them at this point in time. That's all I want out of this. I want them to be criminally prosecuted like everybody else is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest of it is just the process of going through stuff that you need to go through. But that's the one thing that I want.
Well, I do know this, that there's this man, I think his name was Aaron Williams, and I could be mixing up the name, but this African young man was murdered by San Francisco cops in San Francisco, I think back in 96 or something like that. And the cop who actually killed Aaron was not indicted. However, the people living in San Francisco and the different groups who work against police brutality did not accept that. And they kept lots and lots of pressure up on the police department and the chief of police and those different organizations up in the city. And I think it took 5 or 6 years, but the police officer who killed him was finally forced off the police department. So that is another option. That is another option that maybe those of us who are activists and don't want these murderous thugs wearing their badges and their guns going around committing murder with impunity, that we could, if you stick with it and we unite together as a force, that sometimes we can have an impact. So that's just something I would, you know, make a suggestion of, is that if the FBI doesn't come through, that maybe that could be the next step.
One thing also is anybody who ever sees a large amount of police officers chasing one vehicle, to call it in and make sure that they're not going to end up like my son. I was basically brought right back to like what had happened the night of Eric. It was a couple nights back, and my kids had gone bowling. It was 12:30 in the evening, and they weren't home. I woke up, I heard sirens and sirens and sirens, and I just thought, oh my God, they did it again, to my other son who's home on leave. And I called him up right away, and he's like, no, I'm okay, you know. And I was shaking so hard out there on the corner, you know, and I'm just looking over there just like Eric being there. And I said, you need to come home right now. I got to make sure you're okay. And he said that they were on Homestead Road and about 8 police officers were chasing one car, you know, and that is just insane right there to begin with. And I called 911 and I said, I really hope that they don't end up dead like Eric Kleemeyer did. And then I called the non-emergency number also and said I was awoken to sirens, lots of sirens. And my son seen 8 of them chasing one car, and I hope that they didn't end up dead like my son, Eric Kleemeyer. If, you know, I just can't see this happening to anybody else. The pain, it never goes away.
No.
And it's ridiculous that's what they feel that they have to do. There should be other type of training that they go through, nonviolent, to handle situations. And if they can't do that, then they shouldn't be working as a police officer.
That's right. That's right, because it's our tax money that pays them. They're supposedly, they are working to serve and protect us, not to shoot and murder us.
That's right.
Well, thank you so very much. I'm just very, we're all very, very grateful that you came all the way from San Jose and Santa Clara today to speak with all of us and to bring up all this, these painful memories and feelings. We really appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you.
Yes, as you all know, this program is called Free the Oppressed, Jail the Oppressor. And this program is to focus on the massive imprisonment and the killings by the state. My name is Ketsa, and from the Barrio Defense Committee. And you all know who the state is, by the way, don't you? The state is various institutions that are protecting a government that has been responsible for committing genocide against people, such as the police, the courts, the DA, the schools, the colonial schools. All these institutions work as one, and we see them as the state. Now, you all know why the state exists. It's because they have to maintain a system, and a colonial system that has been on our backs for a little over 500 years. And they have to be really, really aggressive, because the fact of the matter is that the people are fighting back. You know, we might not hear it in the media because the media is part of the state. But the reality is that they have to become very aggressive because they can't control like they used to. People are fighting back. We don't know it. We don't get that much information. But those are the manifestations. So thank you for listening to this program. I must ask you all to also support this radio station. You know, this is an independent radio station. Freak Radio Santa Cruz has given us the time to be able to speak to you about what's going on in our barrios, what's going on in our communities, you know, how the state is, you know, attacking us and how we are answering back. So please support Freak Radio by, you know, sending resources, because they definitely need resources. You know, or if you have any questions, first of all, I'm going to give you the address to Freak Radio. If you want to write to them, you know, send resources, please do so. The address is P.O. Box 7507 Santa Cruz, and the zip code is 95061. If you want to, you know, send resources, write a letter, you know, tell us if you're listening, if anybody's out there, you know, let us know. Please, you know, we want to hear from you. We want to, you know that you're listening to us. And now I have the honor of introducing to you a family that also experienced police terror, police killing. With you is a member of Samuel Martinez Jr., who Samuel Martinez was executed by a lone officer, San Jose police officer, on May 26th of this year, 2005. And so the family are here to talk about, you know, that incident and what they have gone through and what they are doing now. So I'd like to welcome to you Felicia Martinez and Tina Martinez, Anita Martinez, excuse me. Anita Martinez, who is the sister of Samuel Martinez Jr., you know, rest in peace. And so please listen to the family, because, you know, our responsibility is for the community to hear the family that have lost their loved ones by the hands of these police forces that are supposed to be protecting us. But the reality is they're not. So with you is Felicia Martinez.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Felicia Martinez, and I am a family friend of the Martinez family. And I just would like to say, first and foremost, that I my heart goes out to the Kleemeyer family. I just finished hearing some of their story on the radio, and I never thought that I would ever meet somebody from a city, from another city, that I didn't even know, be in the same place, sharing the same pain. But today we are. Our family has suffered the same disgraceful incident that their family did. Samuel Martinez was shot and killed by a San Jose police officer on May 26, 2005. Police responded to a domestic disturbance call, and one officer arrived. They alleged that he struggled, attacked, resisted. I don't know which word they're using now. And that Samuel was tasered, we believe, at least three times, and then eventually shot and killed by the San Jose PD. By the time that the struggle had ensued and Sam had been shot and tasered and then shot, there was still one officer there. So at this point, still pretty early on in our investigation, the San Jose Police Office Department is conducting an investigation, I guess. Also the District Attorney's Office of Santa Clara County, the Independent Police Auditor, and I guess the Internal Affairs. So our grand jury hasn't taken place yet, and we expect it to happen, I guess, sometime in August or September. Family hasn't heard anything yet, but right now what we're doing is we're trying to urge the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office to open the grand jury hearing for Sam. There's a lot of unanswered questions for this family, and also, I'm sure, for the community of people that have heard the story. First and foremost, why one officer? You know, San Jose PD employs, I think, almost 1,800 police officers within the city. 3 a.m. domestic disturbance call. Where the hell are they all at? One officer arrives, shoots and kills somebody. Still only one officer. That would seem to me to be some sort of issue with their own protocol there. And had, in fact, if what they stated was true, if he did resist, if he did struggle, there's no doubt in my mind that if there was more than one officer there, he would be alive today. Those are the things that the family and also the community has a right to see and a right to know. District Attorney's Office seems to be pretty confident that their case is, my opinion, to benefit the police. You know, we've had several supporters and family members call the DA's office to request an open grand jury hearing, and they've been very insulting with comments such as, quote, if you knew the circumstances in this case, you'd feel foolish about your request. Well, I guess our family's response to that would be, if you're so sure about what these people know and how foolish they feel, then let's see it. There's no reason why any grand jury should be closed, and it's my personal understanding that grand juries were closed for very highly confidential and very intense cases, such as maybe a mobster or the CIA, or a case where, you know, somebody's life could be in danger if information went public, or, you know, it can endanger the community if people knew about certain things going on. And to me, a police officer just does not meet that criteria. For those of you that don't know, because I sure didn't know, I guess a grand jury is a panel of about 18 people that represent the, I don't know if it's the state or the county, but they overlook cases, civil and criminal, the county, and they overlook cases that are civil and criminal. This specific grand jury will be the criminal grand jury, and this police officer will have to go before a grand jury and justify his actions, and they'll take a look at the evidence and the witnesses and see if, I guess, his story matches, you know, what the evidence shows. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the person presenting all the evidence here is the district attorney's office. And the district attorney works hand in hand with the San Jose PD every day. You know, the PD's on the streets arresting him, tackling him down, throwing him in the back of their cars and put him in jail, and the DA prosecutes them. So they work hand in hand together. You know, the likelihood of the DA prosecuting its own is, I'm sure you can all figure that one out. It's just not going to happen. And from my understanding, hasn't happened in this county since 1971. But there's been an indictment by the criminal grand jury for a police officer.
San Jose police officer.
San Jose police officer.
Yes. Anita.
Just with the shooting death of Rudy Martin, Rudy Cardenas, but that was a Bureau of Narcotics agent who was a state drug agent who was indicted by the grand jury, but that's because Lane Leroff, the DA, wanted to indict him. The other grand juries, it was clear the DAs didn't want an indictment, and so the questions they asked led to no indictment whatsoever.
But I really feel that the reason why they indicted it wasn't a police officer, but an agent, so that they can show the community that, yes, they do indict police officers. The fact is that he wasn't even a San Jose PD. If he was a San Jose PD, they wouldn't have indicted him. So they're very strategic as to how they do it and what they do. He was a drug enforcement agent that killed Rudy Cardenas. So, I believe that's the reason why the DA is not, calling for an open grand jury in the case of Samuel Martinez. And so I believe that the pressure of the people, the community, is going to have to set the terms for the DA to do their job.
I agree, and there's no doubt that Michael Walker is the poster child for an example, made an example out of for the district attorney's office, because they're trying to persuade the public that, yes, we do indict, just not our own, I guess, basically, is the message they sent. It's unfortunate because myself, even before I, lived this tragedy and saw the Martinez's, struggle, or see the Martinez's struggle, I also thought the guy was a San Jose police officer, because if you don't pay attention until someone shoots and kills one of your own, and then you realize what the struggles that these families go through, and the red tape that they go through, and it's a shame.
Anita, tell us about how is it that the family was treated, after the tragic death of Samuel.
Well, what they did is they took my mom from the house where he was shot at and took her to police headquarters instead of taking her in the ambulance with her son, which they did. They took her. The only way we found out is that he passed away was I've seen it on the news. I called my mom and I told her. They didn't tell my mom. They already knew. Why didn't they tell her? They should have let her go with her son, Instead, she was sitting at police headquarters not knowing nothing, and he went within the ambulance, And I don't think that's right. Why wouldn't they let her, and they question her after, take her with her son? But yet she couldn't even do that. Now they want her to testify against him. Bad enough, look what they did. Then to sit there and testify against her own son, it's not right.
How long did they keep her at the San Jose PD?
For 2 hours.
Four hours.
And the only way I found out it was when I turned on the news and I saw and they said he died, and I called my mom and I told my mom, they just said that he died and she was in there and they knew.
And they never told
her. They didn't tell her nothing at all.
See,
so again, like with the Kleemeyer family, they treated the mother as a criminal instead of the thug cops being treated as criminals. Here's the mother of Samuel and she's being interrogated as if she committed a crime.
See, one of the things that the San Jose PD, the chief of the San Jose PD said, and I believe that there was a policy that came out at the request of the County Board of Supervisors, I believe it is, that if a loved one or somebody was killed by the San Jose PD, that they had the responsibility to notify the family right away. And they did not.
This policy came out of the supervisor Blanca Alvarado after the shooting death of Gustavo Soto Mesa back in 1991. Was it Quetzal?
Yes.
So that was basically Gustavo Soto Mesa was shot in the back of the head at very close range, like something like a foot away, and the cops said the gun went off by accident. That was the first open grand jury because the people were so upset and so outraged that they really protested in large numbers. And so that was the first time that in the history of San Jose, as far as I know, there was an open grand jury hearing. And it ended up with no indictment of the police officer. However, there was a change in policy for the police that the police had to notify the family within a short period of time the police had to notify the family, not that the family would be notified by watching the news or by some stupid reporter calling up and telling them that, you know, asking them questions and then informing them that their loved one had been killed by the cops. And to this day, that happened in 91, to this day, 2005, the San Jose cops are still not following their own policy on that.
To add further insult to injury in regards to the notification of next of kin, we understand that same incident also happened with the Cardenas family and also with the Martinez family. That's bad enough as it is, but when that happens to you and you have to live through that experience of learning the loss of your loved one, most especially a mother of her son, through the news while the police are sitting there holding you off in a room with an officer outside as though you're a criminal yourself. What's even more insulting is when you get the reports that state the family was properly notified, which is what I understand the Cardenas family went through and is also what the Martinez family went through. There was also some additional information in one of the reports that the Martinez family received where it was specifically stated in there that the police department... a representative that was interviewed from the police department specifically stated for the coroner's office not to try to attempt and contact next of kin, that they would take care of it.
So do you want to say some words, Anita, in regards to your brother? You know, he had how many children?
He has three children.
Okay. He has three children. And I'm sure that they're going through a very difficult situation.
Yeah, Sam had three children, one daughter, Karina, age 17, one son, Samuel the third, actually, because Sam was a junior. He's 9 years old, and a six-year-old son named Gilbert. And yeah, his kids are definitely doing a lot of emotional suffering. And, you know, they'll have to live the rest of their lives without their father, which, you know, impacts any child regardless of how the parent dies, but most especially devastating when a kid has to try to understand, you know, those really nicely decorated police wearing blue uniforms and fancy cars that's supposed to serve and protect, you know, have now killed somebody that they loved.
Mm-hmm. Anita, could you please tell us about Samuel and how much he was loved by his family and friends? And
He was really loved. He had problems. He had problems. He had issues, but he didn't deserve to die that way. You know, why couldn't they shoot him in the leg, make him fall? You know, not, you know. Now, you know, we'll never be able to see him again, you know. And it's really hard. His kids come over to my mom's. We see them, you know. We can't, you know. What do we do? What can, you know. It's hard. It's really hard, you know, and then we go, you know, see his pictures, you know, hear songs that remind us, and what could we do, sit there and cry? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't know nothing right now, you know, nothing, you know.
So they haven't even asked you, they haven't even investigated the family, you know, the detectives. What about the detectives?
Nothing.
You know, I understand that one of the detectives had a history of, you know, a history of brutalizing. He was involved in just brutalizing people. He was the one that was investigating Samuel's case. How is that?
Yeah, that's how it goes. You know, they, you never know. You know, you think that you're entrusting, you know, investigators and detectives. And, you know, I know I definitely believe that, you know, when things like this happen, the right people do the right things. But little do you know that the person investigating an officer-involved shooting was an officer-involved shooter himself. Those are the kind of things that happen within the police department, and, you know, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate, because I think even besides that, I mean, basically what it comes down is the police are policing themselves. Internal Affairs investigates. They're badged officers. Independent police auditor overlooks the complaint process. They don't have any control to do an independent investigation of their own. And you got to do a whole hell of a lot of fighting and footwork on your own, exhaust yourself and your family during your time of mourning to get simple answers.
I just have a very serious problem with the excessive force that the cops use. The call that came in was a domestic disturbance. From my understanding, the woman who called in, she was very calm. She wasn't saying somebody's breaking in. Samuel's not that Samuel's breaking in, just that he's disturbing my peace. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I want to go to sleep, and he won't go away. The person who called in, from my understanding, she was very, very, very calm. Not insinuating that any kind of danger, any kind of threat to anybody's safety was in the works whatsoever. Just to call a domestic, basically a disturbance call. That's it. That in the end, the cop came and used such incredible excessive force to answer the call for a disturbance. It's an outrage. It has to stop. We have to stop it because this, you know, making noise at 3 in the morning is not punishable by death as far as I'm concerned. And there was no reason to use a taser gun on Samuel because a taser gun is a weapon. It's a lethal weapon. Over 140 people have died throughout United States and Canada since 1991 after being shot by a taser. And it's a weapon of torture because it is extremely painful to be shot by a taser gun. 50,000 volts at 5 seconds a pull of the trigger. And if the cop keeps his hand on his finger on the trigger, then the 50,000 volts continues consecutively until the battery dies out. So that's torture. That is absolute torture. And it's against the Constitution of the United States, and it's against all kinds of international laws that the United States government have signed on to. So the cops break the law every time they shoot somebody with a taser gun. But besides the fact, there was no reason to use any kind of excessive force on Samuel. If the cop had come and being calm and said, "Look, Samuel, it's 3 in the morning. You're disturbing the peace. You really need to go." I am sure that Samuel would have left. There was no reason. There was no reason to shoot him. There was no reason to torture him. There for sure was no reason to kill him.
So, how many times did they taser Samuel?
I believe some of the medical reports that the family received shows four.
Four times 50,000 volts.
Yep, 200,000 volts of electricity.
200,000 volts of electricity on one man.
On an unarmed man.
An unarmed man. What the hell is that? And then how many times did they shoot him?
I believe four times.
Four times. And from what I understand is that they shot him. One bullet went through his arm from the front. It was on his elbow side, on the elbow side. And then I understand that there was another bullet that went sideways. It was curved side from the top down to the bottom. So that means that that bullet did not go straight. It meant that somehow he was lying down. He was kneeling or lying down, from what I understand. So that meant that he wasn't even standing up.
And still got shot.
Well, I believe the family is learning more and more information, and the most recent is that there are no entry wounds to the front of the body.
There aren't any entries?
There aren't any entry wounds in the front of his body, although they allege he was advancing or attacking an officer.
Oh, my God.
So if that doesn't call for an open grand jury, I don't know what does. I mean, our family is currently asking the support of the community to contact the district attorney's office
in San Jose.
The district attorney that's handling this case is David Tompkins. Last name is Tomkins. Phone number 408-792-2792. Because they have been very insulting and are refusing to take any calls, I'll also include the address. 70 West Heading Street. Once again, that's 70 West Heading Street, West Wing, San Jose, California, 95110. Also, you can fax the letter of your concern and urge the DA to open the grand jury for Samuel Martinez. Fax number is 408-286-5437. Also, the chief district attorney is Karen Sununu, and her phone number is 408-792-2702. Once again, mailing address, 70 West Heading Street, that's HEDDING, San Jose, 95110. And I thank the community for their support. Please write a letter, fax a letter, requesting an open grand jury for Samuel Martinez was shot and killed on May 26, 2005 by the San Jose police.
I think that also we're asking people to not only call the district attorney, fax the district attorney, and write to the district attorney and tell them that they have to have an open grand jury on this case. Because basically this case is in the name of so many people that have been terrorized and killed by the San Jose PD for many, many years. We have so many cases that have been, that have been unjustified killing. It's like a daily thing. And, we cannot allow this. We have to put them on trial. And we also have to demand that the district attorney do their job. If they're not going to do their job, then they might as well get another kind of job instead of, lying to the public, instead of, making the public, making especially the families go around circles and expending their energies, for justice. I want to also ask people to call Cindy Chavez, who is the representative of the District 3, which is the area that the family lives in. It's mostly the area 2nd, 10th, 11th Street. That's District 3. She owes, this is in San Jose, she owes to the family. And so if she is running for mayor, then she for sure owes the family, to investigate this. The San Jose, the district attorney, has a responsibility to these, city council people. And they also have a responsibility to the County Board of Supervisors. If people want to call Cindy Chavez, that's 408-277-4282. And let her know that there has to be some kind of an open grand jury. There has to be some kind of justice for the Martinez family. Also, her fax number is 408-292-6456. This is a good time to tell her that if she wants to represent the people in San Jose, then she's going to have to start as of right now. The other people that we're asking to communicate with is the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors, because the district attorney has to, be accountable to the County Board of Supervisors, which are they oversee the business of the county of Santa Clara. So we urge people to, to call such as Blanca Alvarado to also, support for an open grand jury. Her telephone number is 299, that's area code 408-5001. And her fax number is 408-295-8642. And if people want to write to her, they can write to the County Board of Supervisors, Blanca Alvarado, Supervisor, 70 West Heading. And it's the same address as the DA, which is San Jose, California, 95110. If you want to write to the rest of the other Board of Supervisors, County Board of Supervisors, there is James T. Beal Jr., Don Gage, Liz Niss, and Pete McHugh. It's the same telephone number, 299-5001. This is just one action that the community can do if they want to support, the family, Samuel Martinez's family. We want justice, and the only way that we can get justice is for the people to act. If we are silent, then we will never get justice. If we do not do anything, then we will never get justice. If we want to do the right thing, then we have to act. The other thing that, you know, the Samuel Martinez's family is doing is a protest on Wednesdays. Every Wednesday on San Pedro and Heading and West Heading, people are standing with you know, posters right on the corner of San Pedro and West Heading, which is basically in front of the county building, so that we can show the DA that we want justice and they got to do their job. This is every Wednesday from 11:30 to 12:30 noontime.
If you want to make your own protest signs, you can put on them, demand open grand jury for Samuel Martinez or something along those lines. Just to let y'all know that in the past week, three people have been murdered by cops in the Santa Clara County. It was one person in Fremont, one person in San Jose, and one person in Los Gatos. This murder by the thugs in blue has got to stop, and it's a crisis. It's starting to become genocide, and these cops are never held responsible or accountable for their actions. They assault and they commit murder with impunity, and we, the people, are the only ones who can put a stop to it.
We want to hear from you. We really want to hear from you. And you know, we need the support of the people, support the family. You know, if people want to get in touch with Samuel Martinez's family, what is your website?
Actually, right now we have an email address, and it is Justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, number 4, Samuel, S-A-M-U-E-L, at yahoo.com. That's Justice, number 4, Samuel, at yahoo.com. Please write in with your support, comments, request to be added on to our email list, and we'll keep you up on what's going on with Sam's case.
And as much as you can, demand from the DA's office of Santa Clara County that the grand jury for Samuel Martinez, that's going to actually be for the cop who shot him, Patrick Geary, I think that's how he pronounces his name, that grand jury be an open grand jury. Personally, the thing I think is what the public needs to start demanding from these people who run the government is that there be no open or closed grand juries, but these cops who murder people be tried just like we're tried. That when a cop murders somebody, he or she goes before a jury trial with a defense attorney, a prosecuting attorney, and 12 jurors. And that way it's open to the public. Everybody who has the time to take off from work or their school or their regular life to go sit in the trial and hear what's going on. The family can be in there and hear what's going on, hear all the evidence, all the lies, all the fabrication by the cops. And hopefully the family can get a good enough attorney so that maybe, just maybe, the cop will be indicted for murder. Because basically, from what I've seen in the two grand juries that I've sat in on, if the DA wants an indictment, he'll get it. If the DA doesn't want an indictment, it will not happen. And typically, the DAs don't want an indictment. But an open grand jury is better than a closed one, that's for sure.
Do you have any other words to say, Anita or Felicia? You know, maybe you should give your email again, because we do need to hear from the community. We do need to hear from people that believe in justice. You know, this cannot go on. So I'm hoping that we'll hear from, you know, from the radio listeners. So if you can give your email again.
Email for Samuel Martinez is Justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, number 4, Samuel, S-A-M-U-E-L, at yahoo.com. Once again, Justice, number 4, Samuel, at yahoo.com.
Did you tell us what other actions you are needing or are doing? You know, what kind of support do you specifically want from the community?
Right now, the critical thing is urging pressure on the district attorney's office for an open grand jury. That's the most important thing for us right now, since our grand jury hasn't happened.
Do you need any, for example, do you need an attorney to represent, you know, the family?
If anybody out there does have referrals, attorney referrals for this sort of incident, please send them to our email address, justiceforsamuel@yahoo.com. We are currently seeking an attorney for this case.
Well, Felicia and Anita, thank you so very much for coming in today and opening up your hearts and telling us about Samuel and what you've gone through in this whole thing.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Freak Radio, for allowing us to, you know, have this this testimony from the families. You know, I know it's very difficult for the families to be able to, you know, tell the story. But the community has to know, the people have to know just really what's going on. You're not going to hear this in the newspapers. You're not going to hear this on the TV. Radio stations like Freak Radio, you know, independent radio stations are the ones that are going to allow what's going on in the community, the struggles that are going on in the community. You know, so we really appreciate them, you know, letting us be here. And like I said, you know, if you have any questions, please call us, you know, at
831-427-3772.
Or write to Freak Radio at P.O. Box 7507 Santa Cruz.
95061.
95061. So don't forget us. You know, this is Free the Oppressed and Jail the Oppressor. The oppressor has to be jailed. You know, they're making our lives miserable. And you know, the only way that we're going to be able to live and our families to live, you know, without being shot down, without being, you know, imprisoned, is for us to take any action. We have to take action. You know, our program was meant to talk about the security housing units, the prisons, because a lot of, first of all, the PDs, the sheriffs, you know, they're all front lines of defense, and they're the ones, they're the first ones that capture our people in the barrios. They either kill us or capture us. And after they capture us, they, you know, we are being tried by this court system, this unjust court system, that 9 times out of 10, they're going to say that we are guilty, whether we're guilty or not. And so, you know, they end up sending us to these concentration camps that they call prisons, you know, where they keep us there for lifetimes, you know. And I'm talking about La Raza and African people. I am speaking on behalf of La Raza, and we have experienced this this lynching, this treatment. Ever since our lands were taken away from us, for the last 500 years, we have experienced this kind of genocide. Today, we're experiencing the massive imprisonment of our gente. We have children, little children, that are being sent into these juvenile detention centers that are, you know, tombs for our children. You know, CYAs, where they're brutalizing our people, you know, just horribly. And then, you know, our children, our sons and fathers, and, you know, our sisters are being sent to these state prisons. Now they're building security housing units. They're prisons within prisons. They're cells where you don't know whether it's nighttime or daytime. You can't have no contact with nobody. You know, they're using psychological attacks against human beings, because that's what they're teaching people in the Stanford universities. You know, Abu Ghraib, it was set up by psychologists and doctors on to see how people are going to act. And you know how they experimented? First, they experimented with us in the shoes, okay? They experimented with us before they set it up in Abu Ghraib and all these other horrible places that now people are protesting. So we're, you know, we're very much involved in the campaign to shut these things down. We're involved to shut the shoe down. You know why? Because we have our loved ones in there, you know. My son is in there, and that's why I know that, you know, they're committing genocide and they're torturing people. And you know what? They're sending most of the people that they're sending to the SHU are people that speak out, organize, or question the authority, the brutality that goes on in these prisons. And I'm telling you, because my son was one of them. He spoke out. He spoke out in the name of a lot of raza that were on a hunger strike. For that, they sent him to the SHU. He's been there for 5 years, okay? But almost six. But you know what? It's going to take, you know, it's going to take more than the courts or the lawyers to take my son out of there. And it's going to take more than that. Not only my son, but a lot of our raza that are in those shoes. A lot of the people that are in the shoes. They have to be shut down. We can't allow these torture units to exist. If they call this place, they call this country democratic, you got to shut them down. And, you know, so that's why we're very much involved to shut these shoes down. You know, we're involved in a front. And I'm, you know, I built an organization called the Barrio Defense Committee when they captured my son back in 1994. And back in 1994, because I saw the necessity of building organization, of building a movement, it's going to take organization to get any kind of justice. It's not just going to be one person, but a lot of people. And the people have to be very well organized. So, you know, as a result of my son's capture, the Barrio Defense Committee was built. But beyond the Barrio Defense Committee, we have had the necessity to build a united front to shut down the SHU, security housing units. This united front is composed of various individuals and organizations precisely to shut down the SHU that is called in California. And so... let me tell you a little bit about the United Front to Shut Down the SHU. The United Front to Abolish the SHU is dedicated to shutting down security housing units in California prisons. The SHU is one type of control unit, which are solitary or small group confinement cells. The inhumane conditions in control units, including total sensory deprivation, amount to torture. The United Front to Abolish the SHU demands that all control units be abolished across the country. Unlock the Box is an organizing conference to shut down the prison control units. Unlock the Box is a product of many years of struggle to shut down the security housing units in California. During this time, the United Front to Abolish the SHU was created as a forum to coordinate the actions of everyone involved in this campaign. Since its creation, the United Front has continued to expand in membership and in the number of people we reach with our message. This conference is a step in the process of building more unity with groups all over the country and the world who are engaged in the struggle to end this torture. The goals of Unlock the Box include increasing communication between groups over a wider geographic area, coming up with plans of action that we can agree to work on as a whole to help strengthen those connections and strengthening our cause through mass participation. The event will be a combination of presenters with vast experience in this struggle, and working groups to come up with plans of action, with performances and food in between. As the date approaches, we will be contacting everyone with a more specific plan and schedule. Until then, we welcome your input, help, and donations to make that happen. This is going to take place on Saturday, October 8th, this year, 2005, from 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Cell Space, 2050, that's 2050 Bryant Street, which is near 18th Street in San Francisco. Up to now, the United Front to Abolish the Shoe includes the Maoist International Movement, the Barrio Defense Committee, Justice for Palestinians, Chicano-Mexicano Prison Project, Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League, African People's Socialist Party, Committee on Raza Rights, Oxnard, and San Diego, California Prison Focus, African People's Solidarity Committee, and other concerned individuals. The endorsers to this conference are the following. The Chains Prisoner Solidarity Organization, which is in Eugene, Oregon. Idris Steli Foundation. Debug, which is a magazine in San Jose. Proyecto Come in Touch. Campaign for Justice for Rudy Cardenas. Justice Action Australia. Black August Organizing Committee. Families to Amend Three Strikes, Books Not Bars, and we're getting a lot of other organizations that are coming in that are endorsing this conference. I really hope that you can make it, especially the families who have loved ones in the SHU, because ultimately the families that stand up, that stand up in defense of their families are going to make a difference. They are the ones that are going to seek justice. The families have to take a stand. We need to hear them. We need to hear their voices, testify. We need to hear from the people that have been in the SHU as well, so that they can testify as to the torture that's going on inside these California concentration camps. That's the only way that we're going to free our people from these concentration camps is by us acting, standing up, and speaking like these courageous families that have come up tonight.
So I'd like to take a short break, and I'm going to play something from A Lyrical Demonstration by Cesar A. Cruz.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and said they were suckers. They wanted me for the army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn. I said never. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me and myself because it never did. I wasn't with it for just every minute in. Occurred to me, suckers had authority. Cold sitting as I dwell in myself. How long has it been they got me sitting in the state pen? I gotta get out, but the thought was stopped before. I contemplated the plan on the cell floor. I'm not a fugitive on the run, but a brother like me begun to be another one. Public enemy serving time. They do the rhyme, y'all. Criticize me for some crime. Nevertheless, they could not understand that I'm a brown man and I could never be a veteran. All the strength situations are real. I got a raw deal, so I'm looking for the motherfucker. Steal. Public enemy. Public enemy. You can call me a Colombian terrorist by all means, if it means that I oppose the lies you spew on TV. Farabundo and Sandino must smile, cause they've been taking on your shady style for more than a minute. You can plan a coup and name it Operation US is trying to screw, but I will still stand against you, cause we are no longer blind, deaf, and dumb, believing the yada yada of the Star Spangled Banner that disguises conquest as progress. And if I must pull a citizen's arrest on George Bush, both junior and senior, for the war crimes against Colombianos, Afghanis, and Centroamericanos, well then, you have the right to remain silent, and everything you said is currently being used against you, so you can hire Channel 2, 4, 7, and 11 and pay off the New York and LA Times, but it's in the people's rhymes that count one of extortion is filed against you. for illegally taking power when your little brother rigged an election down there where the Southern heat makes punching holes in ballots a task too large for the average American. And we file count two for murder at an unprecedented rate of blacks and Latinos on death row as you served as governor in Hingham, Texas, but you had your wardens do the dirty work as you stole both oil and hope from people who believed your compassionate conservative bull. And we file count three, naming you the world's public enemy, a global terrorist trying to manhandle and enslave the world over with your lies and fancy media alibis. But we know that under the veil, you're the terrorist in disguise that we despise. And so I stand, call me a Colombian terrorist, if that's all you can, label me, pigeonhole me, try and silence me. But I will come at you with rhymes, protests, and chants from all directions. Till your empire, like Rome's, crumbles.
That was Cesar A. Cruz's lyrical demonstration. I'd like to introduce another guest we have here tonight.
Entre la fiesta.
This is Alex. And Alex, would you like to introduce yourself? You need to speak straight into the microphone.
Hello, my name is Alejandra Campos. One thing I'd like to talk about is my uncle Jose Luis being in the prison.
And what would you like to tell the people about him being in the Cocoran prison? Have you gotten to see him since he's been there?
No.
And how does it make you feel?
Very bad, because mainly I don't know him.
You didn't even get to meet him?
No.
And you're prevented from meeting him because of the stupid rules of the prison that won't let you in?
Yes.
So what's preventing? Why won't they let you in? What are they saying?
Because I need to have a letter written by my mother saying I have permission to go into the prison to see my uncle.
And but she has written the letter, right?
Yes, but it's not notarized.
So they make you jump through hoops just to visit your own family.
Yes.
And what would you like to tell the warden? Would you like to tell the warden?
Would you like to tell Jose Luis?
Yeah.
Maybe we can send him a message through the radio.
That there's people out in the world that still have remembered him?
And?
And would you like to let him know that you really want to meet him?
Yes.
Do you sometimes go with your grandmother Ketsa all the way down there? You'd ride all the way down even though you can't get in to see him?
Yes, I rode with her one time.
That's very, very sweet of you to do that, to make that long trip.
She's going with me again. And she's going with me again tomorrow. And she's going again with me tomorrow. We had to fight, and I'm telling you, we had to fight to go and see my son, Jose Luis, because the administration, the CDC is so dirty. The prison administration is so dirty. They make an effort so that the family gets discouraged and does not go, cannot go and see their loved one. With their rules and regulations, they have ridiculous rules, such as calling at a certain day, calling at a certain hour.
Going to see him.
And if you don't call at a certain hour, then you have to wait the following week to get, to call again. And if by chance you get through the call and you talk to a guard, then they set an appointment. They call it an appointment to go and see your loved one for the following week or maybe 2 weeks. And many times when you call, it's either the line is either busy or they have a recorder that says call in again. So the families have to go through this terrible process. It's taken me a whole month to get through to go and see Jose Luis for 1 hour.
And the only time that families can call in is during working hours. So what do people do who work at jobs and they don't have a phone available, or at their job they cannot. They are prohibited from using the phone.
Yeah, I had to demand that I go and visit my son because it was impossible for me to get through their telephone. Did you want to say something, Alex?
Yes, one thing I wanted to say is that Jose Luis has a lot of family behind that would like to see him, but there's a rule that's stopping them from going to see. There's a lot of children who would like to meet their uncle that don't even know who he really is, but they cannot go in to see him because of the rule.
A stupid rule.
So I had to call in, and I told them, I demand to go to see my son. And if I don't see my son, then I'm going to have to go up to Sacramento and go in front of the face of the director, you know, because we have done it before. And they hate for the families to go to Sacramento where the Department of Corruption, I call it Department of Corruption that because that's all it is, to be in their face. And so we have done this several times. And so coincidentally, when I told them that I was going to go up to Sacramento, they had room for me. They said that there was coincidentally some time for me to go and see my son, tomorrow, Sunday. And, you know, it took a lot of fight because that's what you have to do to be able to go and see, just to see your loved one in these concentration camps is to fight just to see them. But, you know, our fight is more than just to going to see them. Our fight is to, you know, make them strong so that they can live. They have to live. They have a right to live. They're our family. We love them. They have, they have nieces and nephews, grandmothers, mothers, sisters, brothers. They are connected to a community. And I don't care what they say, but they are our families, and we are going to stick to them no matter what.
And they also have friends who care about them. It's not just their, so to speak, blood family, but their family through people that they've met over the years who love and care about them and want them out.
And people that believe in justice as well, because, a lot of the prisoners, you know, have a very difficult time seeing their families. I met one family that came all the way from San Salvador. And the mother hadn't seen her son in 8 years. He was, I guess, about the same age as my son, Jose Luis, which was about 26 years old. Alex, did you want to say something?
Yes, I did. One thing I wanted to say is Jose Luis has a strong mother who would fight to have anything to have him come out. One thing his mother is trying to do is trying to get a lot of people to shut down the shoe and let all these people who are suffering in the shoe just for one little thing.
So family from El Salvador came. They obviously didn't know the rules and regulations. They didn't know that they had to wear a certain amount of clothing. They didn't know that they had to call and make an appointment. They didn't know all these rules. So the guard said that she couldn't come in. And so she had to kneel and beg and cry just to come and see her child. Finally, the guard let her in and told her that she could come and see him after 8 years for 15 minutes. And when she went to see her son for 15 minutes, her son was, was walking back and forth. He was pacing back and forth, you know, and he saw his mother. And he was already mentally sick. He was so mentally sick that he could not recognize his mother. He said, "No, you're not my mother. You are not my mother." And she was crying and she said, "But, you know, I've changed after 8 years. No, you're not my mother." He would not accept her. You know, he was because these prisons, they destroy, you know, people's minds. They destroy people. And so this is what happened to this young man. He was totally distraught. So, you know, these are just examples of what's going on inside these concentration camps. please, if you want to support this action to shut down the SHU, please call us, you know, at 408-885-9785. Or, you know, get a hold of us in the website. We have a web. It's called barriodefensecommittee.org. BARRIODEFENSECOMMITTEE.org. That's the web. And the Barrio Defense at Earthlink, which is BARRIODEFENS at earthlink.net. That's the Barrio Defense Committee.
And the Earthlink account, that's the email account if you want to send an email.
Is there another telephone number?
You can also call me, Donna, at 408-293-4774.
You know, we're located in San Francisco. We're located in Santa Cruz, you know, in Oakland. So
Oxnard, in any case, we're a little over time now. Thank you so very much for listening tonight. And we're going to close out the program tonight with a song from David Rovics from his album Songs for Mahmoud. And we're going to play the song Moron. And can you guess who the moron is?
Francoise Ducrot lost her job as director of communications. She was representing Canada at a meeting of the NATO nations. When she had the gall to say what was very clear, something everybody knew, which they didn't want to hear. In the global mafia, there's no doubt who's the Don, but everybody knows that George Bush is a moron. Maybe you voted for him because you like to shoot your gun, or perhaps you own an oil company and you're happy that he won. Well, if that is the case, you know you've got to take it on the chin and thank the gods for the doctors of the spin. Because if it weren't for sound bites, then just like his Uncle Ron, there'd be no one left who could deny that George Bush is a moron. Protested and said it wasn't fair. He didn't even win the vote. He should not be in there. But maybe you still have some dignity and you try to put on the best face, because you just can't come to grips. Seems like it just shouldn't be the case. It's as if there's this really stupid cop with a nuclear baton. Not only is he evil, but George Bush is a moron. You're hoping you can make it to the end. Just a few more years and we'll be around the bend. If the world is still standing, not yet blown up into pieces, with a rally at the ballot box, we can see that this nightmare ceases. Till you look over your shoulder at what might happen when he's gone. Once it captures your attention that John Kerry is a moron.